Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. And with me today, I have Adam Christensen from the MacCast. How's it going, Adam?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Awesome to have you here. Also, awesome to have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I am well, sir.
Awesome. I love it when we're all here and no one's like, oh, I feel really bad. My leg fell off.
I think those people wouldn't show up for the podcast, I would imagine.
Most wouldn't. I mean, there's a couple out there that are probably like really hardcore professionals, and they'd be like, no, I've got my leg on ice. I'll go to the doctor after we're done recording the show. Anyhow, sponsor today is Casper, the mattress company, which is really great. We'll be talking about them soon. But first, we have new iMacs to talk about. Apple introduced brand new iMac models today. So they are now just across the board Retina displays. 21.5-inch model is a 4K display. The 27-inch model is 5K. And the 27-inch model also got an updated Intel Core i5 processor. So that would be the Skylake processors. And
Is that good?
Yeah, that's good because it's about time that the iMacs get new processors. It would have been cool to see that on the 21.5-inch model as well. But, they're Core i5 processors. It's just the one in the 27-inch now is faster, lower power consumption, and something that we've been waiting for a while.
Now, the 21.5-inch still has two non-Retina models, right?
No.
Yeah.
It does?
Yes.
Now, how did I not see that on Apple's website?
Just so people know the tech specs. Yeah, there's a base model and a mid-range. It's just the upper, they added the 4K. On the 27-inch, they got rid of the non-Retina models, and you only have Retina on the 27-inch.
Man, that was confusing then, because when I looked at everything on the website, and I was looking at all the specs, it looked like Retina across the board.
Yeah, no, I'm on the buy page, and there's definitely two models that are non-Retina.
Yeah, it's just awesome.
So the Retina model starts at $1,499, and they do still have a $1,099 and a $1,299 model. Right. The other disappointment I thought on the 21.5-inch is they all come with 5,400 RPM spindle drives standard.
Also. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you...
That is interesting.
Yeah.
And if you want to have more than 8 gigs of RAM, you have to do a build-to-order option because you cannot upgrade the RAM in the 21.5-inch model.
Is the 27 still... Do we know if the 27 is still upgradable?
Yes.
So it still has the door?
It still has the door. So 27-inch comes with 8 gigs of RAM, but you can upgrade it to 16 yourself, which is nice. When I look at the specs across the board, I have a very hard time justifying to anyone why they would want to buy a 21.5-inch model, even the Retina model.
Budget reasons surely are one reason.
Sure. You know,
some people would not be able to afford the larger device. But, God, I mean, you're talking about a few $100. It's just so much more computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, my feeling is that if you're looking at the new iMacs based on price and you're thinking, oh, man, I just can't afford the 27-inch model, unless you need to have a brand new iMac today, I'd say save up some money over a couple more months so you have that extra buffer zone that gets you up to the 27-inch model and then get your iMac because you're going to be getting so much more computer for your money.
Yeah, and I mean, it's faster. The screen is better. It's a better device.
Yeah. And okay, here's another thing that I found to be very interesting. The iMacs have Bluetooth 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the new iPhones and iPads all have Bluetooth 4.2.
Well, it's lame.
Well, it maybe. So with Bluetooth 4.2, you get the faster data transfer speeds, you get the better security, and you get all the features that make Bluetooth really great for managing smart home devices, assuming device makers actually do Bluetooth 4.2 smart home gear. And you don't get that on an iMac. So does that mean that Apple is looking at the iMacs as, or is looking only at their mobile devices as tools that people use to control their smart homes?
It certainly could mean that. That would be a stupid way to look at things.
Sure. I don't know. Maybe they just see Bluetooth on the desktop as nothing more than wireless USB.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyhow,
yeah, it's actually kind of that's a hard one to wrap my head around. To be honest, I cannot imagine why they wouldn't put the newer, better, faster Bluetooth in a desktop device where you've got all the room.
Yeah, you would think.
Well, what's even more interesting on that is, didn't we hear this week or last week that Apple updated the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus to add Bluetooth 4.2?
Yes, they did. Yeah. So you'd think if they're including it on the new iOS devices, they retrofitted the previous generation iOS devices to include it. Why not put it on the new iMacs?
Yeah. This is a little odd decision.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it is. That's a perplexing one.
So my advice is, if you're buying a new iMac, get a 27-inch model, assuming you can afford it.
Yeah, indeed. And I want one really, really, really badly. It is time for me to replace my 2008 Mac Pro.
I was looking at that, too, and it seems to me that you also want to start with the mid-range model on the 27-inch.
I agree.
Because it adds Fusion Drive and a little bit better GPU for $200.
Are we not bad-mouthing Fusion Drive today?
I'm not a big fan of Fusion Drive. I would opt to do the upgrade and get Flash. But given the option, do I want a 1 terabyte drive or a 1 terabyte Fusion Drive, I think you get more performance even with the Fusion Drive.
Yeah, you'll get more performance. Yeah, and and at that mid-range, it's a 3.2 gigahertz processor, just like the entry-level model.
They're identically the same. Fusion. Yeah, other than you get the Fusion Drive and you get a R9 M390 instead of an R9 M380 for whatever that's worth. I don't know the differences between the graphics processors.
I'm assuming that you are getting better overall performance from the Radeon M390 as opposed to the M380.
Yeah. It seems like it would be worth the $200 just in terms of getting that flash boot performance and app launching and those sorts of things versus... Hey,
you say mid-range. It seems like that's actually... that there's two models making it the...
There's three models. There's the 3.2 gigahertz model with spinning hard drive only, 3.2 gigahertz with Fusion Drive, and then 3.3 gigahertz with Fusion Drive.
Yep. Oh, and they each up the GPU. So the base model has M380, M390 in the mid one, and M395 on the... Apple always, you know, very often does that. Good, better, best is what they always used to call it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the stock configurations. And of course, then you build to order. It's just, you know, it's hard because you start adding in things like, I mean, if you want 16 gigs of RAM and a 512 flash, you're now at, you're well over the $3,000 mark on a 27-inch iMac.
Yep.
I mean, and for, again, getting back to the budget thing, that's a lot of money for a lot of people, right? Even for a desktop.
Yeah, an entry price point for an iMac is $1,099, so it'd be the base model 21.5-inch. But realistically, from my standpoint, the lowest-end model that you should be looking at is the the mid-range 27-inch model, which means that your entry point is actually $2,000.
That's kind of how I feel about it, too. I mean, the 21.5-inch is nice, too, but again, I think I would want to up the hard drive and the memory still. So at that point, you've probably moved into the range of the base model, you know, the mid-range model, 27-inch. Right. I would guess. I haven't done the build to order yet, but it's going to be close.
Yeah, I'm poking at the build to order models here, and you're looking at something close to 8. So the 32 gigs of RAM is $600. That seems pretty pricey to me.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
2 terabyte Fusion Drive would be $200. Going with a terabyte of flash would be $900. And the there's a 4 gigahertz model for $300.
Yeah. Now, if you compare that to other computers, well, it's probably still kind of expensive. But still, to be able to get all of that packed into something that's no bigger than the display, that is kind of cool.
No, it's cool. There's no doubt. The 5K display is beyond cool. The form factor is beyond cool. Apple is doing a lot of really cool things with this device, but it is not inexpensive. Apple devices, of course, have never been inexpensive, and Macs have never been cheap like their PC compatriots. My issue here that I'm complaining about is that RAM is one of the few things that doesn't have that Apple touch, right? It's RAM. It's Apple always goes with the highest quality RAM that it can use. But the $600 for 32 gigs of RAM seems pricey.
Yeah. Well, that just puts another tick in the box. If the 27-inch really still is RAM upgradable, that's another reason to opt for that model versus the 21.5-inch, because you could opt to not buy Apple's RAM and then upgrade it yourself.
Right.
Yep. There you go. All the new iMacs also come with the just released updated versions of Magic Keyboard and Magic Mouse. So they have built-in rechargeable batteries, which is nice. The overall footprint for the keyboard is 13% smaller, which is probably the space that's taken up by that battery barrel that's on the back of the keyboard. On the older version, and now the keyboard has a scissors mechanism for the keys, which should make them more stable. And then there's also the Magic Trackpad 2,
which is optional,
but it has Force Touch. So this is the first time outside of the Force Touch capable laptops that Apple makes that you've been able to get Force Touch. So that's kind of cool. So the trackpad would be an add-on as opposed to
$50 if you're buying a new iMac, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. But the prices for Apple's Magic accessories went up. The keyboard is now $99. The Magic Mouse is now $79. The Magic Trackpad is $129. So, what is that? Like a $10 price increase across the board?
They used to all be, I think they were all $69, if I wasn't mistaken. I think they had all dropped to $69 across the board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. $69 or $79. Don't you know, lock me in on the price, but it was somewhere in that range, and I think they were all exactly the same, because I had been looking at replacing my Magic Mouse, and so I know that one was $69.
Okay.
I want to say the keyboard and the trackpad were the same.
All right. Well, the trackpad is the one that went up the most, because it's $129 now.
Yeah, and I think that's because they added the Force Touch, and they made it quite a bit wider, so you got more glass on there, too.
Yes, it's 29% wider. I believe it's more than 20% bigger than it was. So that's nice.
Yeah. And the only thing to mention there, like we talked about earlier, is it's the one device, for whatever reason, Apple has said requires Bluetooth 4. So, like, I have an older 2011 MacBook Pro, and out of the box, it's not going to work, although there's some indication that you may be able to run it wired because through the Lightning charging cable USB. But, again, that's untested as well.
All right, it'll be interesting to see if you actually can use it wired.
Or maybe with an adapter, as it's been pointed out by some people, too. Right. That's another thing that you'll have to kind of watch places like Mac Observer, and as we find out more information, I would imagine we would cover that.
Yep. Yes, we will. We have a sponsor this week, and our sponsor is Casper, the mattress company. And I'm pretty happy as a Casper user. I've been sleeping on one of their beds for a couple years now, and it has made a marked improvement in my overall sleep quality, which is awesome because my sleep quality has basically sucked. So I've been really happy to get this Casper mattress in my bedroom. They're really comfortable. They're a foam mattress, but instead of the foam mattresses you get where you sink into them, you can't move around, you sweat, and you're just not happy. That's not a problem with the Casper mattresses. They use the right mixes of foams so that you get the flex in the bed where you need it, and you get the support where you need it, and you're not going to overheat, and you're not going to feel like you've been trapped inside a big bed burrito thing, which is totally awesome. The build quality is really good, and this is something that I pay very close attention to because I'm sleeping on it most every night. I want to make sure that I have a really good bed, and I was really impressed with the way they put their mattresses together. And I'm also really impressed with the prices. They don't have showrooms anywhere. It's just mail-order mattresses, so they've been able to keep the prices lower. I have the queen size mattress, which is $850. And if I were to go and buy a comparable mattress somewhere else, I'd probably be spending over $1,000. And I'm glad I didn't have to spend that much money. It's a great bed, and I'm really happy with it. And I think everyone deserves a good night's sleep, so you guys should check it out. So what you need to do is go to their website, casper.com/TDO. And when you do that, not only can you pick out the mattress that you want, but you're going to get a $50 discount on your order. So if you were to pick up the queen-size mattress like I have, it's going to cost you $800 instead of $850, and you're not paying shipping. They're fantastic beds. I'm really happy with mine, and I think you guys should really check it out. So go hit their website, casper.com/TDO, and order yourself a mattress right away so that you can sleep well too. Thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor. Okay, another thing that I wanted to hit today before we wrap up. Adam, you had a chance to go see the Steve Jobs movie, and I'd really like to get your impressions.
All right, do we need to disclaimer this? I was joking with somebody about spoilers because, you know, it is a Steve Jobs movie, and if you're familiar with any of the books or the other movies or things like that, there probably isn't many spoilers. And
the story has technically been written.
technically been written.
And on on my show, what I said was that, you know, I will stick to just sort of my thoughts and impressions and maybe the structure of the film, but it's sort of like if you don't want to know anything about it, then you may or may not want to keep listening. I don't know. I don't want to turn people off the show, but you get my point. If you're going to be super sensitive to that stuff, we're going to be talking about it. So
yeah, we do put chapter markers in the show. So yeah. if you're worried, just use a podcast app that supports chapter markers, and you can jump ahead.
So my initial impression: I loved the movie. I thought it was great. I thought it was far and away, at least dramatically and from an entertainment standpoint, the best Jobs movie I've seen, and I have pretty much seen them all. So up until this point, I think one of my favorites was Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, but you know where that is, I think in many areas, I mean, it has some serious moments, but it sort of takes more of a lighthearted approach a lot of times to some of the stories, and it's also much more kind of a somewhat historical account, like, you know, they're going through events and things like that. This movie handles that a little bit differently and really focuses on the characters, I think, which is one of the things that I really loved about it.
Woz said that it focuses on the experience of working with Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from the supporting characters, I would say that that's definitely very accurate. But again, the main crux to the film really focuses on Jobs, obviously, and his relationships with those people that he was working with that are featured in the film, obviously.
Yeah, and it's done as, I'll call them vignettes, so three vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
And the first vignette is the original Macintosh introduction.
Mm-hmm.
84.
Right, and then the second vignette would be the introduction of the next cube.
1988.
And then the final vignette is the introduction of the iMac.
Right.
1997 or 8?
98. He came back in 97. The iMac was announced in 98.
Right.
Right. So you get some fall, some dark times, and some redemption out of the movie.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they definitely play fast and loose with the actual, like, facts and events. So, I mean, there's stuff that's wholly, you know, encounters and things like that that are wholly made up. Because it's all done, you know, sort of behind the scenes right before he goes on stage to do each one of these announcements is sort of how it's laid out. And
as only Aaron Sorkin could do, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And the writing is great. The one thing, I'm going back to see it, actually, Thursday, and I will see it again. I will probably see it multiple times. I had the benefit, and I wish I should figure out who wrote this, but I read an article from someone who had seen an early screening of it, and they commented on, you know, Danny Boyle and Sorkin built in these sort of nuanced cues in terms of the props and the things that are going on in the background that sort of build into each scene. And I don't want to give it away because there's one particular thing that I noticed that wasn't mentioned, but there's an interaction with Scully in the second act that if you sort of pay attention to the body language and what's going on, reads into the relationship between Scully and Jobs at the same time. So it's not just the dialogue that's adding to what's going on the screen. It's a lot of what's happening with the sets and the props and how the characters are interacting with those things that provide a lot of subtext. And if you're a fan, you're going to kind of notice those things. I think the general public's not going to be aware of that stuff. But if you're really looking for it, it's incredible what they've done there.
I have a question about Michael Fassbender.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, well, it's a 10-year stretch, I guess. It's only a 10-year stretch. It's a 14-year stretch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the from the trailers, he doesn't look any younger when he's doing the 84 scene.
Yeah, I mean,
they didn't seem to put any effort into making.
Yeah, I don't think they worried too much. As far as him looking like Jobs, I think the point where he looks the most like him is in the iMac launch.
Hmm.
There's definitely several moments where, you know, visually he looks like that. But again, I think they were really going after trying to give the audience an understanding of maybe why Steve Jobs was the way he was and why there was sort of, you know, these different aspects to his personality, you know, why he was considered a genius and a tyrant and what was, I think they were really trying to get at the reasons of, you know, why would that possibly be and sort of asking those questions. And you see that throughout the film. And for sure, I mean, the focus, the main driving point of the dramatic part of the story is the developing relationship that Jobs had with his daughter, Lisa. So they kind of use that throughout the three acts as the thing. And you see his personality and the way he is sort of changed throughout that.
All right. That's an interesting story mechanism to use.
Yeah. And so then the other thing that they did that was brilliant just in terms of the mechanics of the film. So what's not in this film that a lot of people have been saying, well, this isn't going to work because you're not telling any of you know, sort of the factual stuff or the historical stuff. And the way they handle that is, I mentioned one way is through the subtext things that they're doing. Another way is through some moments that happen in between the scenes. And then also through some sort of small flashback sequences. And again, chronologically, how they slip in the facts aren't exactly accurate, but they sort of get the main sort of, for fans like me, they're going to still give you those stories that you all know and sort of the highlights. So, you know, stuff about the garage and about relationships with certain people and why he felt this way about certain members of the team. And so even people who aren't in the film, you're going to get those facts and information. That stuff is still in there. But they really made it supporting and supplemental material to the sort of main dramatic story that they were trying to tell.
Yeah. Now, my take, and keep in mind, I haven't seen this yet because it's not showing in Colorado yet, is that this is not a documentary. This is an artistic piece that expresses the feelings and emotions and various things that people were going through leading up to these three events.
Yeah. And my thing with, you know, sort of this divided, the thing of, you know, Cook and some of the executives, you know, saying that this is opportunistic and things like that. And then you have on the flip side of it, the people who are featured in this film saying they've seen it and they think it has done a great job capturing Jobs and who he was and those sorts of things. So I'm talking about people like Scully and Woz and Andy Hertzfeld and Andy Cunningham. Cunningham, is that right? Am I getting her name right? And you know, my take on that has been, and after seeing the film, I think this is probably pretty accurate, is, again, as Brian was pointing out, this only covers a 14-year period, and it's an earlier period of Steve Jobs' life. And a lot of the people who are being critical about it, I think, are the people who knew him toward the end of his life. And you have to remember, this ends in 98, right?
Right. Yep, with the first iMac.
And so it does show that change in Jobs' personality through 98. But he became a much different person, I think, too, from 98 through the end of his life, through 2011.
Well, it, you know, I observed a couple days ago, I said that the Becoming Steve Jobs should be considered a companion novel for Steve Jobs' biography.
Right.
And this period covered in the film is essentially the period that Becoming Steve Jobs argues was the time when he learned how to become the Steve Jobs that was awesome.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. And not only that, I very much agree with Dave. These stories need to be told.
Yes.
Stop wanting to control the narrative and have the world see everything as you see it and understand that lots of people have stories to tell.
Well, and I will just say too, and I'm hoping this isn't just because I'm a fanboy, but I think it shows this film also has the highs and lows, and by the end, you know, you have a good understanding of who Steve Jobs was at that point and how he sort of changed over that period, and you can see how he's probably going to continue to grow and change, you know, as you're sort of leaving the film. So I don't think it's all bad. You know, there's definitely some moments in there that show the really good parts of Steve Jobs as well. So the people who think it's just all negative or people who are commenting saying, well, I'm not going to see it because it's, you know, a negative portrayal of him. I didn't get that at all. I got that this is a very, you know, like all humans are, a very nuanced person. And you're going to gain, you know, a better understanding of sort of, again, maybe I think they really were driving at, you know, how does someone like that, who's such a genius, what makes him so complex? You know, and so why does he behave one way in certain moments and other ways in others? And how does he internally resolve those things within his own personality?
So Jeff's going to start yelling at us, but I will point this out. The people who have seen this film love it. and the people who are saying that you shouldn't see this film have not seen it.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
But by and large, with all due respect.
And Brian,
I loved it. That's all I'll just say. I loved it. I'm going to go see it multiple times again, looking for more and more of. I mean, you're going to miss a lot in a first viewing. I think it's going to be one of those things, especially if you're a fan. You're going to need to have multiple viewings to kind of get it.
Yeah, there are two movies this movie season that I've been looking forward to. One was The Martian, and the other is Steve Jobs. And that's saying a lot, because I couldn't even finish reading the book that Steve Jobs is based on, but I'm really excited to see the movie.
Yeah.
And we are so out of time.
Just last thing for people who want to know. So it was out in 4 theaters on the 9th, I think 3 in New York and 1 in L.A., it's sounding like there's going to be a rollout Wednesday or Thursday into about 20 or so other locations. So you can check your listings and see if it's near you. And otherwise, I think wide release is on the 23rd.
Yep, that sounds about right. Okay, Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well. And Casper, thank you for being our sponsor today. Hit their website, casper.com/TDO. Get yourself an awesome mattress for $50 off. Listeners, thank you for being here. And we'll see everyone again tomorrow.